Nearly 32,000 men, women and children have reached the Canary Islands by boat so far this year on the world's deadliest migration route, breaking a 17-year-old record for arrivals in the Spanish archipelago. Last weekend, four boats carrying a total of 739 people arrived at El Hierro, the smallest and most westerly of the Canary Islands, along with the bodies of two people who had died on the perilous Atlantic route from Africa. A further two people died in hospital. The latest arrivals bring the total number who have reached the archipelago since the beginning of the year to 32,000. During the small boat crisis in 2006, 31,000 people made it to the Canaries. According to data from Spain's Interior Ministry, 15,000 people arrived in the Canaries in October alone, increasing the huge strain on the island's infrastructure. Fernando Clavijo, the regional president of the Canary Islands, renewed his calls for more help from Spain's government and the EU. More than 1,000 anti-Semitic acts have been recorded since the deadly 7th of October attack by Hamas gunmen on Israel, the Interior Minister Gerald Damanin said. The number of anti-Semitic acts has exploded, he told France 2 Television, adding that 486 people had been arrested for such offences, including 102 foreigners. France's Jewish population, estimated at over 500,000, is the largest in Europe and the third biggest in the world, after Israel and the US. Paris Police Chief Laurent Nunez said last Sunday that there had been 257 anti-Semitic acts in the Paris region alone, and 90 arrests. There was no typical profile for those arrested, he added.
Pope Francis cited his poor health as he declined to read a prepared speech at a meeting with European rabbis, and a Vatican spokesperson said he had a bit of a cold. A breathless Francis, aged 86, told the rabbis during the audience that he was very happy to receive them, but added, "I'm not feeling well, and so I prefer not to read the speech, but give it to you, so you can take it with you." His speech condemned anti-Semitism, war, and terrorism. Francis said his first thought and prayers went, above all else, to everything that has happened in the last few weeks.
In the Philippines, a radio anchor was fatally shot in his studio in a brazen attack witnessed by people watching the program live on Facebook. The gunman gained entry to the home-based radio station of Juan Jumalon, a provincial news broadcaster, by pretending to be a listener. He then shot him twice during his broadcast. The attacker snatched the victim's gold necklace before fleeing on a motorcycle with a companion who had been waiting outside, police said. An investigation is underway to identify the gunman. The Philippines has long been regarded as one of the most dangerous places in the world for journalists.
In New Zealand, the final results of the general election show the centre-right National Party will need the support of the Libertarian ACT Party and populist party New Zealand First to form a coalition government. The governing Labour Party was ejected from office after 6 years in the October election. Last Friday, the results from about 600,000 votes cast overseas or outside a voter's electorate were released. Incoming Prime Minister Christopher Luxon said coalition negotiations would continue well into this week. Nearly 32,000 men, women and children have reached the Canary Islands by boat so far this year on the world's deadliest migration route, breaking a 17-year-old record for arrivals in the Spanish archipelago. Last weekend, four boats carrying a total of 739 people arrived at El Hierro, the smallest and most westerly of the Canary Islands, along with the bodies of two people who had died on the perilous Atlantic route from Africa. A further two people died in hospital. The latest arrivals bring the total number who have reached the archipelago since the beginning of the year to 32,000. During the small boat crisis in 2006, 31,000 people made it to the Canaries. According to data from Spain's Interior Ministry, 15,000 people arrived in the Canaries in October alone, increasing the huge strain on the island's infrastructure. Fernando Clavijo, the regional president of the Canary Islands, renewed his calls for more help from Spain's government and the EU. More than 1,000 anti-Semitic acts have been recorded since the deadly 7th of October attack by Hamas gunmen on Israel, the Interior Minister Gerald Damanin said. The number of anti-Semitic acts has exploded, he told France 2 Television, adding that 486 people had been arrested for such offences, including 102 foreigners. France's Jewish population, estimated at over 500,000, is the largest in Europe and the third biggest in the world, after Israel and the US. Paris Police Chief Laurent Nunez said last Sunday that there had been 257 anti-Semitic acts in the Paris region alone, and 90 arrests. There was no typical profile for those arrested, he added.
Pope Francis cited his poor health as he declined to read a prepared speech at a meeting with European rabbis, and a Vatican spokesperson said he had a bit of a cold. A breathless Francis, aged 86, told the rabbis during the audience that he was very happy to receive them, but added, "I'm not feeling well, and so I prefer not to read the speech, but give it to you so you can take it with you." His speech condemned anti-Semitism, war, and terrorism. Francis said his first thought and prayers went, above all else, to everything that has happened in the last few weeks.
In the Philippines, a radio anchor was fatally shot in his studio in a brazen attack witnessed by people watching the program live on Facebook. The gunman gained entry to the home-based radio station of Juan Jumalon, a provincial news broadcaster, by pretending to be a listener. He then shot him twice during his broadcast. The attacker snatched the victim's gold necklace before fleeing on a motorcycle with a companion who had been waiting outside, police said. An investigation is underway to identify the gunman. The Philippines has long been regarded as one of the most dangerous places in the world for journalists.
In New Zealand, the final results of the general election show the centre-right National Party will need the support of the Libertarian ACT Party and populist party New Zealand First to form a coalition government. The governing Labour Party was ejected from office after 6 years in the October election. Last Friday, the results from about 600,000 votes cast overseas or outside a voter's electorate were released. Incoming Prime Minister Christopher Luxon said coalition negotiations would continue well into this week. Nearly 32,000 men, women, and children have reached the Canary Islands by boat so far this year on the world's deadliest migration route, breaking a 17-year-old record for arrivals in the Spanish archipelago. Last weekend, four boats carrying a total of 739 people arrived at El Hierro, the smallest and most westerly of the Canary Islands, along with the bodies of two people who had died on the perilous Atlantic route from Africa. A further two people died in hospital. The latest arrivals bring the total number who have reached the archipelago since the beginning of the year to 32,000. During the small boat crisis in 2006, 31,000 people made it to the Canaries. According to data from Spain's Interior Ministry, 15,000 people arrived in the Canaries in October alone, increasing the huge strain on the island's infrastructure. Fernando Clavijo, the regional president of the Canary Islands, renewed his calls for more help from Spain's government and the EU. More than 1,000 anti-Semitic acts have been recorded since the deadly 7th of October attack by Hamas gunmen on Israel, the Interior Minister Gerald Damanin said. The number of anti-Semitic acts has exploded, he told France 2 Television, adding that 486 people had been arrested for such offences, including 102 foreigners. France's Jewish population, estimated at over 500,000, is the largest in Europe and the third biggest in the world, after Israel and the US. Paris Police Chief Laurent Nunez said last Sunday that there had been 257 anti-Semitic acts in the Paris region alone, and 90 arrests. There was no typical profile for those arrested, he added.
Pope Francis cited his poor health as he declined to read a prepared speech at a meeting with European rabbis, and a Vatican spokesperson said he had a bit of a cold. A breathless Francis, aged 86, told the rabbis during the audience that he was very happy to receive them, but added, "I'm not feeling well, and so I prefer not to read the speech, but give it to you, so you can take it with you." His speech condemned anti-Semitism, war, and terrorism. Francis said his first thought and prayers went, above all else, to everything that has happened in the last few weeks.
In the Philippines, a radio anchor was fatally shot in his studio in a brazen attack witnessed by people watching the program live on Facebook. The gunman gained entry to the home-based radio station of Juan Jumalon, a provincial news broadcaster, by pretending to be a listener. He then shot him twice during his broadcast. The attacker snatched the victim's gold necklace before fleeing on a motorcycle with a companion who had been waiting outside, police said. An investigation is underway to identify the gunman. The Philippines has long been regarded as one of the most dangerous places in the world for journalists.
In New Zealand, the final results of the general election show the centre-right National Party will need the support of the Libertarian ACT Party and populist party New Zealand First to form a coalition government. The governing Labour Party was ejected from office after 6 years in the October election. Last Friday, the results from about 600,000 votes cast overseas or outside a voter's electorate were released. Incoming Prime Minister Christopher Luxon said coalition negotiations would continue well into this week.
Stephen Fry has called for an end to the use of real fur in the bearskin caps worn by the King's Guard on duties such as the guarding of Buckingham Palace. The actor has backed an animal welfare campaign calling for fake fur to be used rather than the real bear fur tradition. "It is never an excuse for cruelty," says Mr. Fry, who is narrating a video which shows undercover film of how black bears are killed. The Ministry of Defence says the bear fur is from legal and licensed hunts. Tall black bearskin hats are a familiar sight at ceremonial military events, such as the changing of the guard outside Buckingham Palace. The King, who is a keen environmentalist, and other members of the royal family are seen wearing bearskins at parades such as Trooping the Colour. But Mr. Fry wants to stop using the fur of slaughtered wildlife for such caps, arguing that there is good quality artificial fur available. He narrates a video for the animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, which criticizes how bears are mercilessly killed by trophy hunters, and says their fur is used to make the caps worn by the King's Guard. "It takes at least one bear to provide enough fur for each cap," says Mr. Fry, who was a guest at last May's coronation. A supporter of the animal welfare group made an undercover video which claims to show hunters putting down buckets of strongly scented food as bait and then shooting black bears with crossbow bolts when they approach. Mr. Fry's narration says that bears might not be killed at once but might die later from infected wounds or blood loss. The bears are then disemboweled, and it's claimed that body parts are used for trophies and their furs sold. By continuing to purchase caps made of black bear fur, the UK government drives demand for pelts and effectively incentivizes hunters, says Mr. Fry. Britain has always prided itself on being sporting, but these bears, lured with cookies to the hunter's hiding place, stand no chance of survival. Kate Werner of PETA says the UK government is sponsoring bait and kill sport hunting of mothers and other bears. PETA says it will share the video footage with King Charles as it asks him to support a switch from real to artificial fur. But a Ministry of Defence's spokeswoman says that these bear pelts are sourced from authorised hunts and a regulated Canadian fur market to date, and, to the department's knowledge, an alternative has yet to meet the standards required to provide an effective replacement for the bear skin ceremonial caps. Buckingham Palace declined to comment. Stephen Fry has called for an end to the use of real fur in the bearskin caps worn by the King's Guard on duties such as the guarding of Buckingham Palace. The actor has backed an animal welfare campaign calling for fake fur to be used rather than the real bear fur tradition. "It is never an excuse for cruelty," says Mr. Fry, who is narrating a video which shows undercover film of how black bears are killed. The Ministry of Defence says the bear fur is from legal and licensed hunts. Tall black bearskin hats are a familiar sight at ceremonial military events, such as the changing of the guard outside Buckingham Palace. The King, who is a keen environmentalist, and other members of the royal family are seen wearing bearskins at parades such as Trooping the Colour. But Mr. Fry wants to stop using the fur of slaughtered wildlife for such caps, arguing that there is good quality artificial fur available. He narrates a video for the animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, which criticizes how bears are mercilessly killed by trophy hunters, and says their fur is used to make the caps worn by the King's Guard. "It takes at least one bear to provide enough fur for each cap," says Mr. Fry, who was a guest at last May's coronation. A supporter of the animal welfare group made an undercover video which claims to show hunters putting down buckets of strongly scented food as bait and then shooting black bears with crossbow bolts when they approach. Mr. Fry's narration says that bears might not be killed at once but might die later from infected wounds or blood loss. The bears are then disemboweled, and it's claimed that body parts are used for trophies and their furs sold. By continuing to purchase caps made of black bear fur, the UK government drives demand for pelts and effectively incentivizes hunters, says Mr. Fry. Britain has always prided itself on being sporting, but these bears, lured with cookies to the hunter's hiding place, stand no chance of survival. Kate Werner of PETA says the UK government is sponsoring bait and kill sport hunting of mothers and other bears. PETA says it will share the video footage with King Charles as it asks him to support a switch from real to artificial fur. But a Ministry of Defence's spokeswoman says that these bear pelts are sourced from authorised hunts and a regulated Canadian fur market to date, and, to the department's knowledge, an alternative has yet to meet the standards required to provide an effective replacement for the bear skin ceremonial caps. Buckingham Palace declined to comment. Stephen Fry has called for an end to the use of real fur in the bearskin caps worn by the King's Guard on duties such as the guarding of Buckingham Palace. The actor has backed an animal welfare campaign calling for fake fur to be used rather than the real bear fur tradition. "It is never an excuse for cruelty," says Mr. Fry, who is narrating a video which shows undercover film of how black bears are killed. The Ministry of Defence says the bear fur is from legal and licensed hunts. Tall black bearskin hats are a familiar sight at ceremonial military events, such as the changing of the guard outside Buckingham Palace. The King, who is a keen environmentalist, and other members of the royal family are seen wearing bearskins at parades such as Trooping the Colour. But Mr. Fry wants to stop using the fur of slaughtered wildlife for such caps, arguing that there is good quality artificial fur available. He narrates a video for the animal rights group, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, which criticizes how bears are mercilessly killed by trophy hunters, and says their fur is used to make the caps worn by the King's Guard. "It takes at least one bear to provide enough fur for each cap," says Mr. Fry, who was a guest at last May's coronation. A supporter of the animal welfare group made an undercover video which claims to show hunters putting down buckets of strongly scented food as bait and then shooting black bears with crossbow bolts when they approach. Mr. Fry's narration says that bears might not be killed at once but might die later from infected wounds or blood loss. The bears are then disemboweled, and it's claimed that body parts are used for trophies and their furs sold. By continuing to purchase caps made of black bear fur, the UK government drives demand for pelts and effectively incentivizes hunters, says Mr. Fry. Britain has always prided itself on being sporting, but these bears, lured with cookies to the hunter's hiding place, stand no chance of survival. Kate Werner of PETA says the UK government is sponsoring bait and kill sport hunting of mothers and other bears. PETA says it will share the video footage with King Charles as it asks him to support a switch from real to artificial fur. But a Ministry of Defence's spokeswoman says that these bear pelts are sourced from authorised hunts and a regulated Canadian fur market to date, and, to the department's knowledge, an alternative has yet to meet the standards required to provide an effective replacement for the bear skin ceremonial caps. Buckingham Palace declined to comment.
It's 11 p.m. You should be asleep, but you're watching a video on your phone. And tomorrow, you'll wake up and go to work where you'll stare at a computer for 8 hours. When you get home, you might even watch a movie on TV. So if you're anything like the average American adult, you spend more than 7 hours a day staring at digital screens. So what's all this screen time actually doing to your body and brain? Surprise, surprise, humans did not evolve to stare at bright electronic screens all day. So our eyes are suffering the consequences. An estimated 58% of people who work on computers experience what's called computer vision syndrome. It's a series of symptoms that include eye strain, blurred vision, headaches, and neck and back pain. And in the long term, this amount of screen time could be damaging our vision permanently. Since 1971, cases of nearsightedness in the U.S. have nearly doubled, which some scientists partly link to increased screen time. And in Asia today, nearly 90% of teens and adults are nearsighted. But it's not just the brightness of our screens that affect us, it's also the color. Screens emit a mix of red, green, and blue light, similar colors to sunlight. And over millennia, it was blue wavelengths in sunlight that helped us keep our circadian rhythms in sync with our environment. But since our circadian rhythms are more sensitive to blue light than any others, a problem occurs when we use our screens at night. Typically, when the sun sets, we produce the hormone melatonin. This hormone regulates our circadian rhythms, helping us feel tired and fall asleep. But many studies have found that blue light from screens can disrupt this process. For example, in one small study, participants who spent 4 hours reading e-books before bed 5 nights produced 55% less melatonin than participants who read print books. What's more, the e-book readers reported that they were more alert before bed, took longer to fall asleep and reach restorative REM state, and were more tired the next morning. But perhaps the most concerning changes we're starting to see from all this screen time is in kids' brains. An ongoing study supported by the NIH has found that some preteens who clocked over 7 hours a day on screens had differences in a part of their brain called the cortex. That is the region responsible for processing information from our 5 senses. Usually the cortex gets thinner as we mature, but these kids had thinner cortexes earlier than other kids who spent less time on screens. Scientists aren't sure what this could mean for how the kids learn and behave later in life, but the same data also showed that kids who spent more than 2 hours a day on screens scored lower in thinking and in language skill tests. To be clear, the NIH data can't confirm if more time spent staring at screens causes these effects, but they'll have a better idea of any links as they continue to follow and study these kids over the next decade. It's no doubt that screens have changed the way we communicate, but only time will tell what other changes are on the horizon for humankind. It's 11 p.m. You should be asleep, but you're watching a video on your phone. And tomorrow, you'll wake up and go to work where you'll stare at a computer for 8 hours. When you get home, you might even watch a movie on TV. So if you're anything like the average American adult, you spend more than 7 hours a day staring at digital screens. So what's all this screen time actually doing to your body and brain? Surprise, surprise, humans did not evolve to stare at bright electronic screens all day. So our eyes are suffering the consequences. An estimated 58% of people who work on computers experience what's called computer vision syndrome. It's a series of symptoms that include eye strain, blurred vision, headaches, and neck and back pain. And in the long term, this amount of screen time could be damaging our vision permanently. Since 1971, cases of nearsightedness in the U.S. have nearly doubled, which some scientists partly link to increased screen time. And in Asia today, nearly 90% of teens and adults are nearsighted. But it's not just the brightness of our screens that affect us, it's also the color. Screens emit a mix of red, green, and blue light, similar colors to sunlight. And over millennia, it was blue wavelengths in sunlight that helped us keep our circadian rhythms in sync with our environment. But since our circadian rhythms are more sensitive to blue light than any others, a problem occurs when we use our screens at night. Typically, when the sun sets, we produce the hormone melatonin. This hormone regulates our circadian rhythms, helping us feel tired and fall asleep. But many studies have found that blue light from screens can disrupt this process. For example, in one small study, participants who spent 4 hours reading e-books before bed 5 nights produced 55% less melatonin than participants who read print books. What's more, the e-book readers reported that they were more alert before bed, took longer to fall asleep and reach restorative REM state, and were more tired the next morning. But perhaps the most concerning changes we're starting to see from all this screen time is in kids' brains. An ongoing study supported by the NIH has found that some preteens who clocked over 7 hours a day on screens had differences in a part of their brain called the cortex. That is the region responsible for processing information from our 5 senses. Usually the cortex gets thinner as we mature, but these kids had thinner cortexes earlier than other kids who spent less time on screens. Scientists aren't sure what this could mean for how the kids learn and behave later in life, but the same data also showed that kids who spent more than 2 hours a day on screens scored lower in thinking and in language skill tests. To be clear, the NIH data can't confirm if more time spent staring at screens causes these effects, but they'll have a better idea of any links as they continue to follow and study these kids over the next decade. It's no doubt that screens have changed the way we communicate, but only time will tell what other changes are on the horizon for humankind. It's 11 p.m. You should be asleep, but you're watching a video on your phone. And tomorrow, you'll wake up and go to work where you'll stare at a computer for 8 hours. When you get home, you might even watch a movie on TV. So if you're anything like the average American adult, you spend more than 7 hours a day staring at digital screens. So what's all this screen time actually doing to your body and brain? Surprise, surprise, humans did not evolve to stare at bright electronic screens all day. So our eyes are suffering the consequences. An estimated 58% of people who work on computers experience what's called computer vision syndrome. It's a series of symptoms that include eye strain, blurred vision, headaches, and neck and back pain. And in the long term, this amount of screen time could be damaging our vision permanently. Since 1971, cases of nearsightedness in the U.S. have nearly doubled, which some scientists partly link to increased screen time. And in Asia today, nearly 90% of teens and adults are nearsighted. But it's not just the brightness of our screens that affect us, it's also the color. Screens emit a mix of red, green, and blue light, similar colors to sunlight. And over millennia, it was blue wavelengths in sunlight that helped us keep our circadian rhythms in sync with our environment. But since our circadian rhythms are more sensitive to blue light than any others, a problem occurs when we use our screens at night. Typically, when the sun sets, we produce the hormone melatonin. This hormone regulates our circadian rhythms, helping us feel tired and fall asleep. But many studies have found that blue light from screens can disrupt this process. For example, In one small study, participants who spent 4 hours reading e-books before bed 5 nights produced 55% less melatonin than participants who read print books. What's more, the e-book readers reported that they were more alert before bed, took longer to fall asleep and reach restorative REM state, and were more tired the next morning. But perhaps the most concerning changes we're starting to see from all this screen time is in kids' brains. An ongoing study supported by the NIH has found that some preteens who clocked over 7 hours a day on screens had differences in a part of their brain called the cortex. That is the region responsible for processing information from our 5 senses. Usually the cortex gets thinner as we mature, but these kids had thinner cortexes earlier than other kids who spent less time on screens. Scientists aren't sure what this could mean for how the kids learn and behave later in life, but the same data also showed that kids who spent more than 2 hours a day on screens scored lower in thinking and in language skill tests. To be clear, the NIH data can't confirm if more time spent staring at screens causes these effects, but they'll have a better idea of any links as they continue to follow and study these kids over the next decade. It's no doubt that screens have changed the way we communicate, but only time will tell what other changes are on the horizon for humankind.